Welcome to Make the Call with Rick and Patricia Rickenback. Today we have our special guest, Nevin Gusick. He's going to be our guest commentator, and we're going to talk about a lot of things today. He's written over 10 books, three of which are Red Dawn in Retrospect. It's about the Soviet-Russian-Chinese war planning against the U.S., Sowing the Seeds of Our Destruction, about useful idiots on the right, conservatives and libertarians get manipulated by totalitarian states. And the third, The Manifesto, and his newest, of Constitutional American Nationalism, Neither Right Nor Left, But America First. Welcome to our show, Nevin.
It is great to be back. Got lots to talk about.
Yes, and it's good to have him back. He's our encyclopedia.
Oh, he's our reference.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Patty, you're very political and very informed.
Sure she is.
Yes, of course, but I'm more the layman term, and you have the intellect and the resources to back it up. I mean, that seems common sense, which to me is not common. I will say this, common sense is not common.
Well, hey, any business or any private endeavor, it's important to have a very solid division of labor, and I think this show is an excellent example of that. I mean, literally, it's become very successful.
Well, thank you, Nevin. I mean, this is one of the last uncensored political shows. It seems like everybody is beholding, and they can only say certain things on their show because of their advertisers or sponsors. And a good example of that would be Glenn Beck. And I know you got a bone to pick with Glenn Beck.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate because Glenn Beck has done really a lot of good work related to the subversion of the Muslim Brotherhood and George Soros and aspects on the left, as well as the similarities between National Socialism and Communism. But unfortunately, Glenn Beck, as much as I do believe he loves the United States of America and is a loyal citizens, no doubt about it. He is an ideologue. I also suspect he does get possibly money as Empire is in grave financial trouble, and it would not surprise me if he gets money from free trade, pro-free trade, pro-outsourcing interests.
Can you give us examples of what you're upset about or what?
Well, the biggest thing I'm really upset about with Glenn Beck is his positions that he's taken on free trade and outsourcing in the past, especially as related to the Trump candidacy. He actually, in the wake of Trump's speech at the Republican convention, I mean, whether you like Trump or not, it was an excellent speech, hit many important points. However, one of the points that Trump mentioned was, I am not going to let companies move to other countries firing their employees along the way without consequences. And actually, there were laws that were brought forth by Congress in the early 1970s that would have stopped that, but were killed by globalist business interests in the Nixon administration at the time. Now, Glenn Beck, of course, responds because he took issue with Trump's position on anti-outsourcing. So Glenn Beck says, quote, "What the hell is that? That has nothing to do with our system. Zero. A president, a Congress cannot stop a company from moving outside of the United States. They cannot give them consequences for doing what's right for themselves and their shareholders. We may not like it, but that is the free market." And there are three things I'd like to unpack about this, but I think, you know, I'd like to get some comments from Rick and Pat on, well, what did you think of such a statement before I dissect it?
The whole thing is when you have a company, and just like a candidate who has become independently wealthy because of the support of the American people, and then to turn your back on them and have no loyalty, I'm offended by that, Nevin. Well, offended by that.
Like the Republicans at the convention that have made their living off the Republican Party, have gotten wealthy because of the Republican Party, and yet, because of their lack of support for Donald Trump, are in effect supporting Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense, Nevin?
Well, I think in a de facto sense, that's correct. You know, Laura Ingraham, regarding the Ted Cruz speech, you know, had a very, very, very good point. What should have happened is basically, and this is something I thought of even before I read Laura Ingraham's Senator Cruz should have said speech, was simply three things. Look, thank you, my supporters, We have to unify against Trump. I'm not crazy about Trump. I don't forget what he said, or his surrogates, I should say, to be specific, about my family. But we have to unite against Hillary because Hillary does not have the interests of the United States at heart. We have to unite against Hillary, vote for Donald Trump. But mark my words, my supporters, you need to not stay asleep. You need to remain active. You need to hold a future President Trump accountable according to the principles of liberty. And if he said that, he would have, I think, gained the support of both his hardcore supporters.
But he didn't say that.
He did not.
No, he said, vote your conscience. And really, it was, he shouldn't even have been there.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't add to the excitement of that convention.
No, he had a party pooper speech.
But the only problem is, and I think perhaps giving Trump the benefit of the doubt, I mean, we don't know what was going through his mind, but I think there was a strategic element. Because if you disinvited Cruz and just not sent an invitation and then told him, look, you can't come, even after looking at the speech, I am sure that Senator Cruz, as well as his more hardcore loyal supporters, would have made political hay, so they would have...
No, I say
Trump.
Invite him, but invite him there for what? He should be supporting the candidate.
I know, and you know, to tell you the truth, I think Senator Cruz and his supporters would have still made political capital, even if Trump invited him, looked at the speech, and then Trump had second thoughts and said, oops, you're not supporting me. Don't bother coming at all.
I think he dug his own grave.
I think Cruz would have made political capital of it no matter what.
And he turned around the next day and he said because of the personal things that he said about his wife or his father.
And he still could have put that in there too as well. But say Hillary is still the long-term enemy and she is not loyal to the country. Whatever we like or dislike about Trump, you still have to vote for Trump.
But
my experience in politics is you got to have thick skin because it does get personal.
Yes.
They pull anything they can out of the bag, any kind of trick, they go after you, and you can't take things personal.
Right. Right. Well,
now,
you have to put the big boy pants
now,
on, and you know you're dealing with gorillas here.
This guy wants to be president of the United States, uh-huh. and yet if you say comments to him that are personal, he becomes unraveled.
Yes.
And he's not part of the team anymore.
That's right.
Well, that's exactly how I feel about Hillary Clinton, because what she's done in the past, she has gone on the record on certain issues and then turned around and not abided by what she did. In fact, with the hearing in Congress, she lets everybody else answer for her. And then she plays, well, I didn't know, or I'm not computer savvy. I'm smart in one...
She's not accountable.
No, she's not accountable. And we have to hold our politicians responsible. That's the whole thing. Congress now, and all of government, seems to do things and have no responsibility. We turn around and we have a country that's falling apart. We have jobs that are going overseas. We have an unlevel playing field. And we're sitting there making these personal attacks and diverting the American people's attention instead of focusing on what the real issue is. The real issue is our economy and our border security. That, to me, is the most important. Our economy needs to get back on track.
Absolutely.
We need to bring jobs here. We need to keep our companies here. And we need to have American loyalty, as well as in our government, our companies, and our country. We need to stop being this unlevel playing field. We got to stop thinking about the rest of the world in lieu of ourselves. We have to start focusing on this country.
I agree. And getting back to, of course, what Glenn Beck was saying earlier, his positions that he put forth, his statement in response to Trump's criticisms of companies outsourcing jobs and capital abroad, including to countries that are frankly enemies of the United States. Let's unpack Glenn Beck's statement. So first of all, he says that has nothing to do with our system zero. Well, that's not true, because we had the American system of political economy complete with tariffs and infrastructure as a sort of national capitalism which existed for at least from almost this country's founding and then accelerating under Whig and Republican presidents of the Whig and Republican parties and then continuing under Republican parties and all the way until really the 1940s after World War II, when that started to get disassembled after World War II for various reasons. So, yes, the concept of managed trade or balanced trade was a large part of the American system, starting with George Washington and Alexander Hamilton imposing the tariff of 1789 for various reasons, both for funds as well as to preserve and nurture American industry and preserve American industry. Now, Beck says a president, a Congress, cannot stop a company from moving outside the United States. Well, that's not true. In fact, there was the Burke-Hartke bill of the early 70s, which actually precisely tried to do that, and it was President Nixon and his globalist allies and organizations like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and ECAT, the Emergency Committee on American Trade. These were all pro-Soviet interests, by the way, during the Cold War, pro-China interests. They wanted to stop, they wanted to continue the outsourcing of jobs to Mexico, to the Mexican maquiladoras at the time, because they had a very good deal going. So that's not true. And Congress, according to the Constitution, as you know, also does have the authority to regulate trade and outsourcing is a perverse form of trade, essentially. And then presidents in the past, I mean, not that it's necessarily right, but also presidents in the past, starting with President Roosevelt and continuing forward, have also aggregated authority to also negotiate and impose trade policies too as well, which of course is then put up for the Congress for a vote. Example, like the Trade Expansion Act of President Kennedy. That was a brainchild of the Kennedy White House, and protectionists opposed it, both in the Democratic and Republican Party. It was brought to a vote, and unfortunately, it passed. So Glenn Beck is not entirely right in that statement. I think it's a misleading statement.
I don't think he's right in many of his statements lately.
Well,
He's way off base. He's not with mainstream America. Mainstream America wants to make America great again.
Exactly. Well, let's continue, because I think it's important for the audience, because if they listen to Mark Levin, they're going to get more free trade BS, essentially. And I think it's important that we discuss the facts with the audience here and really try to deconstruct Glenn Beck. So he says, they cannot give them, meaning the multinational companies that outsource, consequences for doing what's right for themselves and their shareholders. That's a very revealing statement of what Glenn Beck thinks about the average American worker, male or female. Other businesses that used to be reliant on the disposable income of people who used to work at that GE or Caterpillar plant before it was shut down and moved abroad. He doesn't think very much of them. And there was a period where it was even taught in business school, Clyde Prestowitz, who used to work for the USTR, the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, under Reagan. He was somewhat of a higher up in that food chain. And he wrote a book called The Betrayal of American Prosperity. And he documents, and I reproduce his information in my latest book, The Manifesto for American Constitutional Nationalism. And he reproduces documentation where they used to even teach in the business schools, including, I think, Wharton and Harvard and others, as well as in American business groups, the importance of what used to be called the stakeholder model. And the stakeholder model of American business believed that simply that there were several groups that really should and had to benefit from American capitalism. And that was the American worker, the community, and yes, the shareholders and the owners. That transformed itself in the 70s and 80s.
It used to be the companies would have their shareholders were part of their workforce. When you worked for a company for so many years, you earned some stock. You earned ownership in that company. Now it's like it's all about profits versus loyalty to your workforce.
Exactly.
And that I have a problem with.
Me too.
Because here they have a loyalty. They should have. Big companies should have a loyalty to their workforce because their workforce and the country that their workforce lives in are the ones that made them independently wealthy to begin with.
Correct.
Got them off the ground, Nevin.
Correct.
So here we have, all of a sudden, you're going to throw that aside and go to your lobbyist groups and your foreign investors. And let me tell you something. We have turned this political system into a free-for-all as far as the world owning our politicians and our companies.
Well, we're
and
a plutocracy.
I have a
yeah, we are an oligarchy. Me too, and that's a huge issue for me too. You know, what had happened was starting in the 1970s, you had a lot of what you and I support of American capitalism changed. You had people like Dr. Milton Friedman, the famed economist, Nobel Prize winning economist, who believed that the most subversive idea in a free society is that a company should have social responsibility. You had the shareholder-only theory model, which was picked up by executives like former General Electric CEO Jack Welch, who was a pioneer of this, is basically the most important thing is shareholder value, and that's it. And Glenn Beck, in a very revealing fashion, supports that view. He basically says, screw you to the American community, local American communities, American workers, and others. It's basically almost a betrayal of the spirit of Russell Kirk, the famed conservative philosopher, and his view on the permanence of the things and the importance of local communities. And that was his brand of American conservatism. And the last part, I don't mean to go on and on, but this is so important, is lastly, Glenn Beck calls that outsourcing, implies that outsourcing is an example of the free market. Well, that is just bupkis, because when we look at outsourcing, and I've studied this more than frankly I wanted to, but what happens with outsourcing, the genesis of outsourcing, the American government provides advice at times on companies how to outsource their operations. The Commerce Department has done that, particularly under Reagan, in its Expo Maquila program. You have also the tax laws. Companies are allowed to deduct as moving expenses and general business expenses, expenses for outsourcing. You also had, starting under, I think at least under the Kennedy administration, the liberalization of the tariff code, which allowed companies to basically save on tariff costs for outsourcing jobs.
So once again, it's the main thing what we always say on this show is we don't get our say. As American citizens, we do not get our say. Government is dictated by big business and by their lobbyist groups, which have unlimited financial resource, and the American people get the bill because they're given trinkets.
Well, here's during the presidential debate with Romney and Obama, both of them said they're going to stop giving tax breaks to companies going overseas. Did that happen?
Of course not. It'll never happen.
No. Okay, so there's no level playing field because they have high tariffs. We don't.
A lot of non-tariff barriers, too, as well. The latest thing is really not so much tariffs ever since those have been progressively negotiated away. There's a lot of non-tariff barriers like state-owned enterprises, currency manipulation. Another subsidy, by the way, and this will be my last point to close out Glenn Beck's point, is other countries will use government policies like currency devaluations, infrastructure improvements, advertising disciplined and controlled labor forces as a means of attracting American companies. An example of that was when Mexico in the 80s, they devalued their peso purposely so labor will be cheaper so American companies can come into Mexico. And one of the reasons why Mexico wanted those American companies to come in was also to repay big American banks for the loans that socialist status mercantilist government took out. And actually, there were two, at that time, in the 80s, the two biggest earners of hard currency for Mexico was the state-owned oil company, because of oil exports, as well as the Maquiladora operations, those outsourced firms. So Glenn Beck, in closing, is absolutely perpetuating misleading disinformation, essentially, to really mislead the American public, frankly, of his ideology.
There's no reason to listen to him.
No, not on that issue, not on economics, at least.
And given our companies tax breaks to go to China, which is getting very aggressive militarily is going to work against us in the future. Is it wise for us to build up their industries over there?
No, I don't. I think President Nixon was grossly mistaken in opening up to China, frankly. And he did that at the behest of big business, Pepsi Cola, even before polls were shown, even in the 50s and 60s, that there were a number of American multinationals that felt we should have traded with China. And that's, to me, is trading with the enemy. They want to completely eviscerate the United States of America.
There's no human rights over
there. Through a global war in alliance with Russia.
There's no human rights there.
No, of course not.
People get thrown in prison for speaking up against the government.
Yeah. Oh, the millions of people are executed. They're put in slave labor camps that produce goods for export.
So why are we building, making a country like that a world power? And we're doing it because we did it with the World Trade Organization without having them meet certain criteria. Like the
three words: greed, globalism, and naivete.
And yet, when you go to war, they want our kids to go fight and protect the same people that got us into this situation.
Yeah, and Walmart, one of the biggest corporate sponsors of communist killers in China, they'll be saying, "Oh my God, we support our troops and waving the American flag," and that kind of hypocrisy sickens me. And that's what will happen. And it's important that we have shows like this, Make the Call of WEI, and books and other shows. We have to call them out on their lack of patriotism or their fake astroturf
patriotism. And at the same time, these companies are leaving Detroit and the other cities and going overseas. The crime rate goes up in these cities.
Of course. Teddy Roosevelt said that, you know, free trade will result in the fatty degeneration of our fiber.
Right.
And he was
so
right.
Then the crime rate goes up. Then you have the financial impact of the criminal justice system.
Yep.
And what does our government do when they have a failed NAFTA?
And they wonder
policy,
why these cities are in turmoil?
They turn around and they vote for a Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Absolutely.
I mean, so here we have, what's the best diversion? You have a failed policy that you've already voted on. And let me tell you something. It was during the Clinton years of that NAFTA and this Trans-Pacific Partnership. Just beware that candidate Hillary Clinton does not represent the American people. She's made millions in politics. So how can you represent the poor? How can you represent the American people when you're independently wealthy on the backs of Americans?
Well, Hillary is a self-serving politician. Her roots were clearly with the far left, the Communist Party USA left, as a matter of fact, starting with her internship at basically a communist-dominated law firm, Truhoff and others. And it just goes downhill from there.
We have homeless vets, homeless families who lost everything, children in the streets. These politicians, they only represent themselves. And it's about how fast they can fill their coffers with money from the lobbyists. They don't care who their donors are. So here they are swimming in their political ponds until a lobbyist catches them in their net or gets them on a hook.
That's right. Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the things taking off from Hillary Clinton, what I was saying, is she became part of that. The Clintons and others have, and Tim Kaine is a part of this, or VP nominee, is part of that new Democrat coalition where it's merged far extreme left positions with that of this economic worldview, which supports globalization and really betrays the American worker. And
what about these H-1B and H-2B visas? They're not supposed to be used unless we have a deficiency in workers here.
Which Bill Clinton has raised the caps, actually, on to over 100,000.
And so has a lot of Republicans, because we keep saying once they get up there in office, they turn around and they become one party up there.
Well, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio were very big supporters
absolutely
of the H-1B visas. Ted Cruz, in my opinion, opportunistic, changed his stance on H-1Bs by late summer of 2015, when at the same time Donald Trump came out with his on his platform on his website a position that was against H-1B visas. So then Cruz opportunistically changed his position, in my opinion, on that, and all of a sudden sounded like the biggest opponent of H-1B visas since Professor Ron and Anil Hira.
Does it sound like the candidates are kind of shying away from this globalism now?
Well, because they get contributions, as Patty says.
Well, the whole thing is right now we have one candidate up there, which is Donald Trump, which is exposing the cronyism up there. And what it is they're all kind of pretending they have party lines, but they have one party, one agenda. They have been backpedaling. We've seen it on E-Verify. We've seen it on the immigration policies. We've seen it on the trade agreements. We've seen it on the banking crisis.
All part of this globalism. That's why you didn't see Kasich. You didn't see the Bushes at the convention. They would rather Hillary get elected.
They would. Well, there's some of the never Trump people actually have said they have preferred, would prefer Hillary Clinton. I mean, somebody like Robert Zubrin, for example, who has raised valid concerns about aspects of Trump's associations, but he is hardcore never Trump, was behind the Colorado Republican sort of revolt against Trump during the primary. Well, Robert Zubrin has indicated on his own Facebook page, it seems like the way I read it, a preference for Hillary Clinton in certain respects by posting an article from a neoconservative source indicating its support for Hillary Clinton, why she would be more conservative.
Because they could deal with her. She'll fall
like
in line. They all feed from the same trough.
Well, the whole thing is we've had a Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama. And now we want to have the same normal. You have so many politicians or elected officials that are coming out and saying they're so afraid of what this country is going to go into. But the American people have been asleep for all of these administrations. We have not got a handle on it because what it is these administrations have been flip-flopping, but they all seem to have the same agenda. They all seem to want to keep outsourcing our jobs. They want to destabilize our economy.
Destroy the middle class.
And destroy the
middle
class.
Well, they have us distracted, in my opinion. And I think social issues are very important issues to discuss, the social cultural issues, Second Amendment, and things of that nature. But I can't help but to think that they use social issues, whether pro or anti-abortion, pro-gay or anti-gay, pro-Second Amendment, anti-Second Amendment, as a diversion away from these other issues, even stuff that goes on with the news, like with the zoo and the gorilla and everything else. It seems like these are all distractions from really the issues that are upsetting Americans that could unite us to challenge what I term the globalist cartel.
Well, what they want to do is they want to distract us and divide us.
Yes.
And a house divided is easily controlled because what's happened is they want to divert the sleeping Americans, because that's what we are. We've been sleeping for a long time because we've been kind of diverted about, well, is it a race thing? Are we upset because we don't want to be labeled as Islamophobic. We don't want to be labeled as certain things. And then we turn around where our country is being distracted instead of looking at the real issues, which is we have security problems in this country. We have unlevel playing fields as far as our trade. We have outsourcing of jobs, destabilizing our children's future. We don't have the American dream anymore. We have immigration laws that are being totally disregarded. I mean, what is going on with this country? We are being diverted against the real
immigration
issues.
Laws. Let's talk about the angel moms, the ones who protested in front of Paul Ryan's house.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is
because
that
because they lost
thing?
Children to illegal aliens that are felons?
This is the same man.
You don't hear Obama talking about that.
No. Well, Paul Ryan basically feels that we have to put ourselves in the shoes of foreigners, basically. If I remember, that's roughly what the quote is. Well, how about him?
What about that wall he has about around his house, and he doesn't want a wall at the border?
Of course not. Well, the thing is that Paul Ryan is an example of a Marie Antoinette type of Republican, if you will. Basically, to the public, let him eat cake. You know, I'll never forget, for example, there's a
good analogy.
There's a video out there of where a opponent of Paul Ryan as he was walking with his wife and I think his kids down the street in Janesville, Wisconsin, and where he was basically asking Paul Ryan, you know, what are you going to do about outsourcing jobs? And you had supported that. Community is hurting. And he just told the person, I kid you not, oh, why don't you have some candy? Because there was a festival mm-hmm. that Paul Ryan and these other people were participating in Janesville, Wisconsin.
Oh, you mean the same Paul Ryan that stood up during the bank crisis and was afraid of losing their jobs and afraid that this would be devastating to the American economy and the American worker? Well, let me tell you something. It was still devastating. There were a lot of Americans out of jobs. There were a lot of people that were hurting, and I didn't see him
still
even
hurting.
Skip a beat.
Again, he's a Marie Antoinette Republican. I mean, his intellectual hero is Ayn Rand, and I respect Rand on her support of, in general terms of economic freedom as supposed to collectivism like fascism or socialism or communism. But Ayn Rand also preached a complete crass materialistic selfishness. And that's even in some of her private correspondence, which I reproduce some quotes. So with somebody motivated by Ayn Rand, especially on that level, makes it required reading and it, by his congressional staff, you start to see a certain personality side with that. And that personality is a very, very selfish person that really, at the end of the day, is concerned about his political career. The famed radio talk show host Chuck Carter once called it in one of his books, the I've got mine attitude. And that is so true.
Well, that seems
that's true
to
with
be,
most of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems to be the MO for all the elected officials up there right now. It's they become part of the millionaire club versus representing the American people. They have turned politician instead of public servant. And that is the whole thing. That's one of the reasons why this candidate, Donald Trump, mm-hmm. has become so popular is mm-hmm. because he is saying, for once, the American people are being disregarded. They're getting the bill. Because government will give the American worker and the person who files the income tax the bill
yep.
versus, you know, they get their salary, but they want the American people, the American mm-hmm. worker, to get the bill.
Your thoughts are absolutely correct. I actually compare this phenomenon to this situation. I have this analogy I just came up with. You ever shake up a soda bottle? And all the bubbles look very angry and agitated in the bottle, but there's a cap that's holding it in mm-hmm. and keeping it in. And the bubbles are still kind of, you know, even though they're fizzling, they're still there. There's still a lot of pressure in the soda bottle. The Donald Trump phenomenon is like the person twisting the cap off of that soda and all that gas and all that energy just coming shooting right out of the bottle. And whether we like Donald Trump or not, that's the fact of the matter. The American people have been angry. We've been taught at the 2012 Republican convention, oh, we got to worship the job creators, you know, the big business, the titans on the Wall Street. They're the only job creators. You know, of course, we don't mention the consumers or the employees that helped the titans of Wall Street or the industrialists to prosper.
Oh, yeah. They're the first ones to go to government and say we need a bailout.
Exactly.
And the bailout comes from where? Not government. It comes from the American worker who filed the income tax. That's where the money is going to come from. That's where the debt is going to be paid. That big debt, that big gift that they gave big business, that big gift that they give to illegal activity
mm-hmm.
and illegal aliens that come into this country is on the backs of the American worker and the future of the American citizens.
And the Republicans and a lot of the corporate Democrats, they represented the cap that was keeping all the anger and all the upset feelings inside. And of course, who twisted the cap off? Whether you like him or not, Donald Trump, and let all that energy out. Or let all that gas out.
Nevin, I got another analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Bring the pimple to a head, bust it, and let it heal.
Exactly. Oh, that's even better. Disgusting and gross, but very to the point.
But he's,
it has been
all
festering
the issues
for a
that
long
have been
time.
Festering with the American people, he's bringing it to a head. There's got to be a healing process after all this comes out, which the anger, the frustration of the American people, not having a say in government. And I believe we are approaching, you know, maybe a crescendo of feelings,
mm-hmm.
which are going to come to a head. But after that, I think the American people are going to come together more than ever.
What they're going to finally realize that we're Americans first, and we owe our loyalty to our fellow American citizens and the greatness of this country where we live.
Especially,
we have to take care of our own house.
Especially yes. now that yes. We see this terrorism taking over the world and terrorizing people. Many people are getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
And many people are fearful now.
When they go out in public, they're worried that they might be next.
Oh, absolutely. Especially over in Europe. You saw that in Munich and France. And
truck bomb, the truck attack that killed at least 60, 70 some odd people at least. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And that's why we also have to really get a control on our borders too as well. Because, I mean, there are reports. It's published by people like Claire Sterling and WorldNet Daily and others where ISIS agents have pointed out that they're going to use the refugee crisis to infiltrate agents into the United States.
And they have already.
And Western Europe. And then there's also the issue of Islamists using the population weapon too as well. There's a very interesting quote. I found it when I was doing research at FAU. And it's very revealing. It's Sheikh Umar Abd al-Rahman, the Egyptian Islamic cleric who's been tied to world global Islamic terrorism, including against the United States, if I remember. And he said this in 1996. He said, quote, "A time bomb will explode in America, France, and elsewhere in the Western countries. This bomb is the Islamic population explosion. The number of Muslims will multiply and they will march towards America and elsewhere. No force on earth will be able to stop them. This bomb has nothing to do with the entry or exit visas or whether Sheikh Umar Abd al-Rahman is arrested or not. It is an Islamic march which no government or laws can prevent. Muammar Gaddafi, you know, the one that even a lot of the Trump supporters say was an ally of the United States? Well, he wasn't. Sorry, guys. In fact, he had this very revealing statement in 2003, Muammar Gaddafi, the former Islamic socialist dictator of Libya. He said, quote, "We have 50 million Muslims in Europe. There are signs that Allah will grant Islam victory in Europe without swords, without guns, without conquests. The 50 million Muslims of Europe will turn it into a Muslim continent within a few decades. Europe is in a predicament, and so is America. They should agree to become Islamic in the course of time or else declare war on the Muslims." And this is the real predicament that we're really seeing unfolding, especially in this country for the past several years, really starting since 9/11. How are we going to deal with this? You know, it's not because we dislike people from the Middle East based on their color of their skin, their physical appearance, the food they eat, some aspects of their culture. This is why we call for border controls here, very strict border controls. And that's why Donald Trump does have a point when he says that we have to have a moratorium on Muslim immigration from really hot spots for the growth of international
because
terrorism.
You have the radical extremist, an ideology that's growing, and you have a silent majority of the Muslim population that are not standing out against these attacks.
Yes.
And that's the problem that we have. It's not a matter that we're Islamic phobic. The fact is we have a growing population that are silent, and they're allowing the extremists to be the ones in control. And yes. then we look the other way and we tiptoe lightly, and we can't afford to do that as a country. Since it only took a handful of terrorists to bring down the World Trade buildings.
Yes.
Okay.
And their allegiance.
And since then.
Their allegiance, I know they're very religious in their faith, their allegiance should be towards the safety of the American people. If they have someone in their mosque that they know might be a terrorist and might harm the American people, they have a duty to turn them in.
Well, the thing is they need to be loyal to the Constitution of the United States of America and the national and the adjoining national
interest. The country that embrace them.
Exactly. And a lot more people would be very, I think they'd be more, very more understanding. Instead, organizations like CARE comes out and says, you're Islamophobic if you don't agree with them. And they're not.
Well, CARE is the biggest frauds and phonies out there. They put a very public face on how they're for mutual understanding. But when you actually look at the documentation, I mean, they say all kinds of horrible things about Jews, Israel, the United States, some very horrific things in their closed meetings and speeches. And, you know, Stephen Emerson has actually, and other many others have done a lot of research into this. You know, they talk about even it's...
Well, the same with, you ever hear Rahel Raza, By the Numbers?
Yeah.
She came out against CARE.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Saying they're part of the Muslim Brotherhood.
You do have certain elements in the Islamic community, it is true, some of whom, I don't remember their names, but you do have Muslim reformists or what I would like to consider true moderate Muslims that have testified to Congress, who actually have formed anti-jihad, anti-fundamentalist organizations. And frankly, I think if they are indeed bona fide, I think the U.S. government should partner with them in order to neutralize the fundamentalist Islamic presence within the United States.
Any threats. They should neutralize threats.
Yes.
They want to take in, Congress wants to take in more refugees.
Huge mistake.
Unvetted?
Yeah, a huge mistake.
They have no paperwork to vet them. You take them in, and you give them all kinds of social programs. They wind up getting more benefits than our veterans get.
And then they turn around and they become someone like the Boston
because
Bombers.
Because I really believe that a Congress figures the more chaos there is out there, the more terrorist acts out there, the more control they can harness over the American people.
They divert us, Rick. They allow these things
and
to happen.
And try to divide us. They try
and
to
they divide,
divide
us.
Us.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, black against white, against this. You know, it's divide and conquer. It's the old thing. And that they're sitting up there with all the strings laughing.
Yes. Well, it's interesting. I was just looking at in one of my books that I have here, the Muslim Brotherhood, they had a explanatory memorandum, which was a secret document, and it's been publicized since then. It was captured by the FBI. And it talked about how... their plan for the United States, really for North America, including the United States, was to take us from within, essentially. They have actually used those words too as well. And, you know, for a non-state actor, they've had their successes. I mean, they have their reaches both within the Republican and Democratic Party. I mean, there are reports that Hillary Clinton's VP running mate, Tim Kaine of Virginia, actually on his immigration council when he was governor of Virginia, actually had a fundamentalist Muslim operative on his immigration department in Virginia. And we also know that they have their reach into the Republican Party through Grover Norquist and Suhail Khan, you know, who's which is kind of funny. They have their program was, of course, to try and convince American conservatives that Islam is compatible with free market laissez-faire liberalism, which, of course, is not.
Is Sharia law compatible with our American culture?
Of course not. It should be banned in this country, and the practitioners who really aggressively promote that should be either deported from the United States, if they're foreign nationals, or frankly, be stripped of their citizenship and thrown out of the country. I'm sorry to say it, but...
Absolutely.
Well,
we have... just the Orlando shooting. I mean, here we have strived on our diversity, on our integration, on our equal rights for women. We have gone over these growing pains in this country since its founding. We have overcome tremendous barriers to go backwards
Let me talk about an example here, an article that came out. Yazidi girls burned alive for refusing to have sex with ISIS captors.
Mm-hmm.
19 yes. Iraqi Yazidi girls who refused to have sex with their Islamic State captors were placed in iron cages and burned alive in front of a crowd of hundreds in Mosul. Activists and witnesses say the 19 girls were burned to death while hundreds of people were watching. ISIS took the girls and thousands of others as sex slaves after overtaking a northern Iraq region they called home in August. They were punished for refusing to have sex with ISIS militants. Human Rights Watch and the United Nations have called on ISIS to release the girls, citing human rights abuses.
I mean, here we have definitely gone backwards. We are not...
Is anybody, is the Islamic community out here coming out and condemning this?
I haven't heard anything.
I don't hear a ton of it. I mean, you know, and frankly, if a group like CARE, to be honest with you, and I'm sure they probably have issued statements regarding this, frankly, groups like CARE, you know, even if they denounce it, which I'm sure they give some denunciation of what's going on, I don't believe it because it's fake. And in as part of Islamic strategy is basically it's called taqiyya and kitman, which is essentially supposed to feign to the unbeliever, as they're officially called in the Quran, feign friendship, basically, and do what's necessary to basically undermine the unbeliever. And if that means that you're taking them as your friend or cooperating with them, then so be it. It's very Machiavellian, very much like out of Sun Tzu and the precepts of Lenin when it comes to deception.
Well, the whole thing is we have that same Muslim community. They're very vocal when it comes time to say that their mosque is being unfairly targeted because one of their supporters or one of their members happened to shoot up a gay and lesbian bar in Orlando.
Yeah.
So here we are, have a very vocal group when it comes to that. But when it comes to some atrocity worldwide, they're very quiet.
Well, I mean, it hits home in the United States because it hits in the United States. But the most important thing is we all have to understand here that ISIS also doesn't want to stop in just Syria and Iraq. They want a global caliphate, essentially. They want, along with other fundamentalist Islams, total control over the world, essentially, under one ideology.
That's why the American people really have to take notice in this election and really,
well, Christians,
really.
Around the world, Christians and Jews are under attack.
Oh, absolutely.
And if they don't come together.
And Americans are under
attack. The other side is going to take over.
Americans as a whole are under attack, Rick. And we have to come together as Americans and look out for the interest of our country.
And, amen.
And political correctness, forget about it.
Amen. Well, political correctness, that's okay, as long as you are politically correct to correct the corruption in politics. That should be the political correctness.
Well, political correctness, as long as it strengthens the American national interest, and the current political correctness undermines the national interest.
Absolutely.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the show, Nevin. Is there anything you want to say?
Well, yes, never Hillary. That's two words. Vote. Whether you like the guy or not, you got to vote for Trump in November 2016. We got to hold him accountable, really accountable if he does win. And God bless America.
God bless America.
God bless the American
and
people.
And we have to, just like Nevin said, we have to hold the elected officials accountable. It has to be record versus rhetoric. And we have way too much rhetoric going on up there. And nobody is accountable and nobody is responsible. Now we have to, when we elect somebody, we have to hold them accountable.
Get them out of office. Well, we are at the end of the show. I want to thank everybody for listening today and our special guest, Nevin Gusick, for being here. This is Rick and Patricia Rickenback with Make the Call. God bless everybody. Be good to one another.
You'll feel better.